Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. In today's episode, we explore the idea of documenting anticipated outcomes and introduce purpose-driven development, or PDD, which focuses on defining expected outcomes for every software project. This approach helps ensure alignment with business goals and moves away from a feature factory mindset that prioritizes output over value. The AI host discussed my recent story about resistance to this idea, pointing out that it often comes from a lack of understanding or alignment. To track progress, they also discussed my introduction of the feature factory ratio, FFR, which measures the percentage of initiatives or epics without clear outcomes. The conversation highlights that having a clear purpose and a strong strategic alignment is essential for modern software leadership. This requires teams and leaders to adjust both their mindset and practices. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to our deep dive. Today, we're digging into a really interesting piece by Phil Clark over at RethinkYourUnderstanding.com.
That's right.
The title is From Feature Factory to Purpose-Driven Development, Why Anticipated Outcomes Are Non-Negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you've ever felt like your team's working hard but maybe not hitting the mark, well, this one's probably for you.
Definitely. Phil's core argument is that understanding the why behind software is, it's just fundamental to doing it well.
It's about effectiveness, isn't it? Not just activity.
Exactly. He really cuts to the heart of this common problem.
Yeah.
We get so bogged down churning out features, we lose sight of the actual impact.
Right.
And what's great about his take is the focus on intention, making sure all that effort actually adds up to something meaningful, you know, working smarter.
Absolutely.
Smarter, not just busier. Now, we're going to explore Phil's ideas here, but remember, this is our conversation inspired by the article.
Yeah, we might stray a little. So for the full context, definitely check out the original piece on RethinkYourUnderstanding.com. Phil kicks things off with a great little story, an anecdote. It involves an agile delivery leader and a senior architect.
Ah, yes, that story. Uh-huh. It's quite telling, actually. It shows how a sort of offhand, sarcastic comment can bubble up and reveal something much deeper going on.
Which I think many of us have seen happen, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So Phil describes this scene. The agile delivery leader is trying to introduce Phil's idea about defining expected outcomes for Jira epics. Simple enough, you'd think.
Uh-huh.
But the senior architect pipes up with, essentially, why are we doing this? This is stupid. Phil just read another book and now we have to do this.
Ouch. Yeah, that's pretty direct, almost hostile even.
Right. But what's interesting is how Phil interpreted it. He didn't just write the architect off as being, you know, difficult or resistant to change just for the sake of it.
Okay, so what was his take?
He saw it more as a symptom, maybe discomfort or uncertainty about where things were heading, perhaps even feeling misaligned.
Like the architect felt out of the loop.
Possibly. This person had been part of the transformation journey for a while, so maybe they felt things were shifting in a way they didn't fully get, or maybe didn't agree with. Phil suggests the sarcasm was almost like a defense mechanism.
A shield, yeah. Masking something deeper, like, where do I fit into this new way of doing things?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of underlying resistance or questioning. Have you seen that play out? Where the pushback isn't really about the specific instruction.
Oh, absolutely. That initial friction often points to a bigger unease, doesn't it? It's rarely just about the task itself.
So true. And that anecdote perfectly sets the stage for Phil to introduce his core concept, purpose-driven development, PDD.
Okay, so PDD. What's the essence of it, according to Phil?
Well, fundamentally, PDD is about making agile and lean principles more. More alive, more intentional in practice.
Bringing them to life, yeah.
It's the antidote to that feature factory trap. You know, just pumping out code without a clear sense of purpose. PDD means ensuring teams are focused on solving the right problems and for the right reasons with really clear goals.
So the absolute core idea is every single thing we start, every initiative needs a solid why behind it. Yeah. We need to know why it matters.
Precisely. It can't just be about keeping the backlog moving. It has to be directed effort.
And to make that practical, Phil introduced something quite simple, but it sounds really effective. This anticipated outcomes idea.
Yeah, this is where it gets really tangible, something you could almost start using tomorrow. He basically required that every epic, every major initiative had to have this short statement, an anticipated outcome.
Okay, and what did that statement need to cover?
Just a sentence or two answering two key questions. One, what are we actually hoping to achieve here?
Mm-hmm.
And two, how will achieving that positively impact our customer or the business or maybe the platform itself?
It sounds almost deceptively simple, doesn't it? Just write down what you expect to happen.
It does. But forcing that pause, that moment of articulation right at the beginning, you can see how powerful that could be.
And Phil makes a critical point here. It's not about guaranteeing results, is it?
Exactly. That's crucial. It's not about crystal ball gazing. It's about setting a hypothesis.
Ah, okay. Like, we believe doing X will result in Y.
Precisely. It's a well-reasoned expectation, something the team can then look back on, learn from, adjust based on reality. It grounds the work in a deliberate why.
Instead of just working through a list of tasks.
Right. Have you ever been on a project where the initial goal felt kind of fuzzy? And then later, it was hard to even say if you'd succeeded.
Definitely. Yeah, that lack of upfront clarity bites you later. This anticipated outcome seems designed to prevent that.
That's the idea. Sharpen the focus right from the start.
So once teams started doing this, defining these outcomes, what changes did Phil see? What were the benefits?
Well, he points out several positive effects that started showing up. First, much better alignment.
Alignment between teams and strategy?
Yeah, exactly. When everyone gets the intended outcome, it's easier to see how your piece fits into the bigger puzzle. It just connects things better.
Makes sense.
Second, it drove more meaningful prioritization. If you're weighing up initiatives based on their anticipated impact, you can make smarter choices about what delivers the most value.
Rather than just say, whoever shouts loudest.
Right. Or just tackling the easiest thing first.
Yeah.
It also created moments for reflection, looking back not just at what was shipped, but what results were actually achieved. Did we hit the outcome we expected?
Learning from the hypothesis.
Exactly. And finally, it gave leadership much better visibility. They could see where the investments were going and, crucially, what those investments were supposed to deliver.
Those are some pretty compelling benefits. But like any change, I imagine it wasn't always smooth sailing. Did Phil talk about pushback, especially from, say, product managers or tech leads?
He did, and I think his perspective here is really insightful, quite empathetic, actually. He noted that product managers, for instance, might resist if they felt like priorities were just being handed down to them.
Ah, like they weren't involved early enough.
Right. If you didn't help define the problem or the desired outcome, being asked to write the anticipated outcome might feel, well, a bit hollow. Or it might expose that lack of early involvement or trust.
Okay, that makes sense. And for technical leaders?
The common challenge there, he suggests, is translating necessary technical work, like tackling tech debt, into clear business or customer terms.
Yeah, that's a classic one. We need to refactor this service. Why?
Exactly. They know it's critical for stability or future speed or reliability. But phrasing that as a direct anticipated outcome, like improve system response time by X percent to reduce user frustration, that can be a hurdle sometimes.
So the resistance isn't necessarily rejecting the idea, but it highlights these other tensions or communication gaps in the system.
Precisely. The request for an outcome isn't an attack. It's more like a diagnostic tool. It surfaces where clarity is missing or where alignment needs work.
And Phil's point is that surfacing that friction isn't failure, right? It's actually progress.
Yes. He frames it as a crucial first step. If people struggle or get frustrated, that tells you something important. It forces the conversations needed to build better understanding and trust across different functions. It gets people talking about the why.
Okay. Now, Phil also mentioned, trying to take this even further, linking initiatives directly to parent OKRs, objectives and key results.
Right, that was the next ambition. The thinking was to forge an even stronger link between the team's work and the big picture strategy.
Makes sense. Have teams explicitly state which OKR or KR their initiative supports?
Yeah, that was the goal. But they hit a snag.
What happened?
Turned out, many teams didn't actually know the relevant parent KR. Or sometimes the initiatives themselves weren't clearly tied to any specific OKR.
Ah, so the OKR structure itself wasn't mature enough yet.
Exactly. Phil is quite open about that. He acknowledges their organizational OKR setup was still evolving, lacking that really tight connective tissue down to the initiative level.
So trying to implement both the anticipated outcome and the OKR link at the same time was maybe too much too soon.
Pretty much. They made a pragmatic call to pause the OKR integration part.
Okay.
And instead really double down on just getting that foundational piece right. Clearly articulating the anticipated outcome for every initiative.
Get the immediate why clear first.
Exactly. Nail that fundamental clarity before trying to build the explicit links all the way up to the high-level strategy. It shows a realistic, iterative approach, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Step by step. Now, to track how well this outcome focus was embedding itself, Phil introduced a metric. And it's got a pretty punchy name, the feature factor ratio.
It certainly gets your attention, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The FFR.
So what is it? How does it work?
It's basically a way to get a quick read, a snapshot, of the organization's orientation. Are we focused on outcomes or just output?
And the calculation.
Simple enough. You take the number of initiatives or epics that don't have a clear anticipated outcome defined. Divide that by the total number of initiatives. Multiply by 100. Mm-hmm. That's your percentage.
So a high FFR means danger zone, more likely to be a feature factory.
That's the idea. Lots of activity, maybe less clarity on the purpose. A lower FFR suggests teams are more consistently connecting their work to expected value.
But Phil stresses this isn't for, like, performance managing individual teams, right?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. It's meant as an organizational awareness tool, like a health check. It highlights areas where maybe the why isn't being communicated effectively or where alignment is weaker. It gives leaders a signal about how well this purpose-driven mindset is actually taking root across the board.
And the name itself, feature factory ratio. Phil explains he chose it deliberately over softer options.
Yeah, he considered things like outcome alignment ratio or clarity of purpose index. Probably more palatable, maybe.
Sounds a bit more corporate speak, yeah.
Right, but he felt those names lacked the punch. Feature factory ratio is meant to be provocative.
To force the issue a bit.
Exactly. To make teams and leaders pause and honestly ask, are we just shipping stuff? Or are we focused on delivering real, valuable outcomes? It's designed to spark those necessary, sometimes uncomfortable conversations.
Makes the abstract problem feel much more concrete. Now, related to that, Phil brings up a really subtle but important challenge. Superficial alignment. What's that about?
Ah, yeah. This is a crucial point for anyone involved in change. Superficial alignment is when leaders, maybe managers, say all the right things.
They talk the talk.
Exactly. They attend the workshops, use the new buzzwords, nod along in meetings. Mm. But deep down, their actual behaviors, the way they lead, the priorities they really set, they don't actually change.
So it looks like they're on board, but the actions don't follow.
Precisely. And that's really damaging, isn't it? It creates this illusion of progress, but underneath, it's acting like an anchor. Phil calls it cultural drag.
Cultural drag, like
it confuses teams because they see the disconnect between the words and the actions, and it just kills any real momentum for change. That sarcastic comment from the architect earlier, that could be a sign of this too.
Right, someone outwardly participating, but inwardly resisting or disagreeing. It's a reminder that real change needs more than just agreement on the surface. It needs genuine buy-in and action.
Absolutely. Mindset shifts and consistent behavior.
So given these challenges, the initial friction, the potential for superficial alignment, what's Phil's advice for actually making this shift towards purpose-driven work happen?
His core message is very grounded, very practical. Start where you are.
Okay.
He stresses that this kind of transformation is a journey. Different people, different teams, they'll be at different points. Don't get discouraged by the resistance or the initial lack of clarity.
Use it as data.
Exactly. Treat those moments as learning opportunities. If a team struggles to write an outcome, don't criticize. Help them ask the right questions. It's about building the muscle for defining outcomes over time, gradually.
Focusing on progress, not instant perfection. And he sees fostering this clarity as a key leadership job now, doesn't he?
Very much so. He basically argues that modern software leadership is about this. aligning delivery with strategy, coaching teams to think in terms of impact, reinforcing the why, measuring outcomes. That's the work.
And he provides a checklist to help leaders think about this, right? For outcome alignment.
Yep. A really useful 7-point checklist. One quick rundown.
Please.
Okay. So first, intent before execution. Is there a clear outcome before work starts? Avoid just delivering features. Second, strategic connection. How does this work link to bigger goals, even informally? Third, team level awareness. Does the whole team get the why and what success looks like?
Uh-huh.
Fourth, product owner empowerment. Was a PO involved in defining the problem or just handed the solution? Fifth, tech debt with purpose. Can we explain the business reason for tech work? Sixth, measurement and reflection. Are we tracking the FFR? Are we looking back at actual versus anticipated outcomes?
Got it. And the last one.
Number seven, cultural leadership. Reinforcing that asking about outcomes is about focus, not control. Leading with curiosity when you hit resistance.
That's a really solid framework for leaders. And he wraps up with a pretty direct message about responsibility, doesn't he?
He does. Basically, if teams consistently can't tell you why they're doing something, the root cause is probably upstream. It likely points back to leadership communication and clarity.
Clarity starts at the top.
Ultimately, yes. Defining and communicating purpose is a core leadership responsibility. If the teams don't know the why, leaders need to look at how they're setting the vision and strategy.
So pulling it all together, the big takeaway from Phil's article is really this shift, isn't it? From just making stuff to understanding why we're making it, defining that anticipated outcome, that's non-negotiable for real impact.
Absolutely. It's about moving from output to outcome, from activity to value, understanding and acting on the why behind the what.
And hopefully for everyone listening, this deep dive into Phil's thinking has given you some concrete ideas about purpose-driven development. It really is a fundamental shift.
It changes how you approach work, how you prioritize, how you measure success. It's moving towards being more strategic, more outcome-focused.
So here's a thought to leave you with as you go about your week. Take a look at the work you or your team are doing. How clear are those anticipated outcomes? Could you articulate them easily?
Yeah, and maybe, just maybe. What might that feature factory ratio look like in your context? Are you focused mostly on activity, or is there a clear shared purpose driving meaningful progress?
Definitely something worth reflecting on. And again, for the full deep dive from the source, head over to rethinkyourunderstanding.com and read Phil Clark's original article.